Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 26 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 27th of June 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, some old news about a Zeppelin raid on Yarmouth. The good weather saw an exceptional Wheels Festival. And last week it was wasps, this week it's adders attacking. Once again, plenty of news stories, but first, a birthday. This week's best birthday wishes go out to Charles Eek, cutting his cake on Monday the 30th. We hope that you have a terrific day, Charles. We've got an exceptional amount of news this week, so it's over to Margaret and Desney for the first part of your local info.
Hello everybody, this is Desney, and we begin with the story behind Martha Taylor, who was killed in a Zeppelin raid in 1915. In the Mercury's latest Heritage Guides column, they look at the life of Martha Taylor, one of the victims of the Yarmouth Zeppelin raid of 1915. On the night of January the 19th, 1915, Martha Taylor, 72, was tragically killed when a German Zeppelin dropped a 110-pound bomb on St Peter's Plain, Great Yarmouth. She was one of the first fatalities in Great Britain in an air raid. Martha Mary Taylor was born on September the 4th, 1842. She was the youngest of seven children, including her twin sister, Jane. Living at No. 5, Row 138, Dog and Duck Row, the family were involved in the fishing industry, the men being shipwrights, carpenters, blacksmiths and caulkers, packing rope, twine and tar in between shiplap. Jane and Martha were employed as beasters. This involved the repairing and making of fishing nets. It was a highly skilled job, but a poorly paid one, often working long hours. Following the death of their parents, the twins, aged 58, moved to No. 2 Drake's Buildings, adjacent to St Peter's Plain. On that fateful night, Martha was returning home for supper when German Zeppelin L3, flying southwards over the town, dropped a 110-pound high-explosive bomb. Tragically, Martha and another innocent man, Samuel Smith, 53, were caught in the blast. Jane perhaps rushed out into the passage to investigate. One cannot imagine the scene laid before her. Mountains of tile, bricks and rubble, shattered glass, twisted pieces of metal and splintered wood. Through the clearing clouds of dust, Jane laid her eyes on the body of her sister, her twin, her soulmate, lying lifeless in the street. Borough Coroner Mr. J.T. Waters stated that the deaths were the wanton killing of harmless people and were nothing short of murder. The biggest irony of this story is that Martha Taylor was an ordinary, uncomplicated and unremarkable woman from a loving family. She should be famed for those qualities rather than holding the accolade of being the first woman to die in an air raid on British soil.
Hello everybody, it's Margaret here, and I have to say, I've had enough of the heat. Please, no more. Anyway, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin having wiped the sweat from my brow. Vets have reported a rise in the number of cats and dogs being bitten by adders in Norfolk. Adders are the UK's only venomous snakes, and their bites can be deadly if they are not treated. These snakes usually hibernate in the winter months and spend their summers in woodland areas or dunes. This means that cats or dogs who explore these habitats are particularly at risk. The Tollbarn Veterinary Centre in North Walsham has now issued an alert after noticing a spike in the number of cats and dogs being bitten by the reptiles. "We've already had reports of several adder bites this year," a spokesman for the centre said. "Adder bites can be fatal if left untreated, so if you believe your pet has been bitten by an adder, please contact your vet straight away." With this in mind, Dr. Rosemary Smith, who runs the mobile vet service Paws Indoors, has shared some advice for dog walkers heading out in Norfolk this summer. "They're most likely to get bitten on the face or the legs or the paws," she explained. "A snake bite is very painful, so your dog will return to you and may well be limping, wiping at its face or have swelling on its face or leg. The easiest way to protect your dog from adder bites is to keep them on a short lead if you're walking in an area where you know there are adders. There are often signs about, as although they were dangerous, adders are protected, so must not be harmed." She added that if you believe your dog has been bitten while out walking, it's important to stay calm and carry or slowly walk them to the car to get to a vet as quickly as possible. "Don't run, as this will spread the poison more quickly and may be painful for your dog," she added. "And don't interfere with the wound, and don't apply a tourniquet or bandage, as this will only make things worse."
A new family attraction is almost ready to open in Great Yarmouth. The Neon Adventure Park will open on Saturday, June the 28th at 1:30 p.m. It is a soft play and party venue for families. A statement on its website said, "When the sun's too hot and the rain won't stop, it's time for kids to jump, slide and bounce at Neon Adventure Park, while Mum, Dad and the rest of that family can chill over a cuppa and snacks. It is based at 8 Bessemer Way. Visit www.neonadventureparkssoftplay, that's all one word, neonadventureparkssoftplay.co.uk for prices and to book slots.
A major search was launched off the Norfolk coast last Sunday afternoon after reports that a light plane had crashed into the North Sea. Coast Guard received an emergency locator transmitter alert at about 12:34 p.m. today that an aircraft was in trouble and needed help off Hemsby. Lifeboats from Hemsby, Caister and Great Yarmouth and Galston stations were sent out along with a Coast Guard fixed-wing aircraft and helicopter to conduct a search of the area. However, the search was called off after no evidence was found of a plane crashing. The search entered the four-hour mark before the Coast Guard stood down the search crews and terminated the search. After a thorough search and following further investigation with no evidence of a missing aircraft, the search has been terminated, a spokesman for the Coast Guard said. Hemsby Lifeboat confirmed that during its search of the sea, only a few footballs and a child's dinghy were found. Chris Batten, secretary, helmsman and vice chairman of Hemsby Lifeboat, said, "We went out 1.5 nautical miles with a span from Long Beach at Hemsby up to Winterton Ness. So, with the three lifeboats, we covered around a 3 to 4 nautical mile area, as well as the aircraft, covering an area 1,500 feet high. If a beacon goes off as a mayday call, we treat it as a person in the water and respond, with three lifeboats involved. We came in at around 4:15 p.m. to refuel, before we and the other lifeboats and aircraft were stood down by Humber Coast Guard. The aircraft that sparked the call-out was not seen on flight radar, but two separate sources reported the downed aircraft. The police and ambulance service were also on scene for a brief period of time."
A man is facing allegations of sexually communicating with someone he believed to be a 14-year-old girl and sending a video of him performing a sex act. Ricardo Souza, 42, and of Wellesley Road in Great Yarmouth, entered no plea to attempting to engage in sexual communication with a child and attempting to cause a child to watch or look at an image of sexual activity. Prosecutor Gaff Khan told the court that there is a significant age gap between the 40-year-old defendant and the complainant. He added that the 14-year-old was a police decoy who he sent an erotic video of himself to and said he wanted to have sex with her. David Clayton, representing Souza, made no representation. Magistrates ordered Souza to attend Norwich Crown Court on July the 23rd for his next hearing. He was released on bail with conditions, including not to contact children directly or indirectly and not to delete his internet history.
And another story on the same theme. An 85-year-old man has appeared in court facing allegations of three sexual assaults dating back to the 1970s in Great Yarmouth. John Knowles of Broadoak, Bridport, Dorset entered no plea to the three charges of indecent assault against boys under the age of 14. The first charge alleges that between March 1971 and December 1973 in Great Yarmouth, Knowles, who was born in 1939, indecently assaulted a boy under the age of 14. The second charge alleges that between September 1979 and August 1980 in Great Yarmouth, he indecently assaulted a boy under the age of 14, with the third charge being similar. Prosecutor Gaff Khan told the court that it was not suitable to be dealt with in the lower court and that historic cases are better dealt with at the Crown Court. Magistrates told Knowles, appearing via video link with combed white hair, wearing glasses, a checkered blue shirt and a cream suit jacket, that he must attend Norwich Crown Court in person on July the 23rd. He has been granted unconditional bail until that date.
A call for a U-turn over a move which could lead to more than 30 council-run care homes and housing with care schemes being sold has been rejected by a single vote. Opposition councillors at Norfolk County Council wanted the Conservative-controlled cabinet to rethink their decision to invite private care providers to express their interest in taking on homes and schemes currently run by the council's own Norse Care Company. Councillors Alexandra Kemp and Maxine Webb from the recently formed Independent Progressive Group, along with Greens' Dr. Catherine Rowett and Serena Shibley Sexton, had challenged that decision, which will affect hundreds of people across the county. But when the matter was discussed by the council's cross-party Adult Social Care and Public Health Select Committee, the call for the cabinet to rethink the approach was rejected. Mrs. Kemp had said it was not the time to take away residential homes run by tried and trusted North Care. She said offering up the council care homes for older people to the private sector will see a drop in standards from the care we have now. She said the council had not carried out an equality impact assessment and there had been a failure to invest in the homes. But Andrew Jamieson, Cabinet Minister for Finance, said with North Care's contracts due to end in March next year, it was absolutely right to test the care market. He said he did not accept that standards would be worse if private companies were to take over the homes. Mr. Jamieson said a fundamental point is that you are going to produce the very best quality of care under the new format with the best possible value for money for taxpayers and the opportunity to transform the estate as quickly as possible. He said an equality impact assessment was not necessary at this point, as a decision on what to do with the homes, which could see them sold, leased or potentially run in house, is still some way off. However, Labour group leader Steve Morphew's call for the issue to be referred back to Cabinet was rejected by 6-5. Conservative Carl Smith then proposed the committee should vote to note the call-in, but take no further action, which passed by 6-5. Afterwards, Mrs. Kemp said the decision was a bleak day for Norfolk.
A young driver using his mobile phone behind the wheel has had his car seized by police. The motorist was caught by officers at the Great Yarmouth Roads policing team on the way back to their station after attending the Wheels Festival on June the 21st and June the 22nd. Police said it turned out he only had a provisional licence and also no insurance. The driver was reported and the vehicle seized. The force attended the festival to discuss road safety.
A popular town centre car park in Great Yarmouth has been resurfaced and upgraded. Generally known as Palmer's Car Park, the facility behind the newly opened The Place building now offers a smoother and safer experience for visitors, says the Borough Council. A council spokesperson said it was another step forward in making Great Yarmouth a great place to live, work and visit.
A major chain has announced plans to close its shop in Great Yarmouth. River Island is proposing to close 33 of its 230 shops by January next year as part of a radical restructuring plan. The clothing brand has now revealed that its shop in King Street in the town is among those that will be shut. The Chantry Place store in Norwich is also among the closures. A further 71 stores could also be at risk, depending on talks with landlords in order to secure improved rental deals. Its shop in King's Lynn will remain open as it stands. Earlier this month, bosses blamed the closures on the migration of shoppers from the high street to online and higher costs to run stores. Ben Lewis, chief executive of River Island, said, "River Island is a much-loved retailer with a decades-long history on the British High Street. However, the well-documented migration of shoppers from the high street to online has left the business with a large portfolio of stores that is no longer aligned to our customers' needs."
The battle for the future of Norfolk's threatened councils is heating up, with leaders who want the county to be covered by three authorities setting out their stall. It is the latest salvo in the fight for what should happen in Norfolk once the Labour government abolishes all of the councils and creates new unitary ones, which would, unlike in the current setup, provide all services to people in their area. While Norfolk County Council's Conservative chiefs want just one council, and South Norfolk Council favours two, leaders at the six other councils say three is the magic number. Norwich City Council, Breckland Council, West Norfolk Council, North Norfolk District Council, Great Yarmouth Borough Council and Broadland District Council are working together to make the three model case. Those six councils have launched a survey called Future Norfolk, asking the public what they want ahead of final submissions to government in the autumn. In a joint statement, the various council leaders, including Yarmouth's Carl Smith, Conservative, say three councils is the best approach. They say having three unitary councils serving Norfolk is best for local democracy. People would be represented by councillors who live closer to their homes, understand their community and what matters to local people. It will ensure communities have their say and provide more strong local voices to champion Norfolk at regional and national levels. We know Norfolk isn't the same everywhere. What works well in one place might not work in another. Each area has strengths and needs. So three unitary councils can support each other while still enabling services to focus on what matters most to people in each area. At the same time, three councils will still be big enough to work well in delivering people's priorities across all council services, making the most of opportunities for Norfolk to thrive, but agile enough to stay flexible to other national changes while maintaining our local focus. The County Council's own report, extolling the benefits of just one council, said a single authority would save £36.2 million a year, while in a situation with more than one, the council covering the west of Norfolk could be financially unviable from the start. However, that analysis is disputed by other council leaders, who also say the county model puts too much emphasis on finances and not enough on accountability or how local services are provided. The Future Norfolk survey is at www.futurenorfolk.com and runs until August the 1st. Local Government Minister Jim McMahon has said he wants to see consensus from councils in the final submission for what should happen. That looks unlikely to happen in Norfolk, and Mr McMahon has previously said the government is prepared to impose models in such cases.
A man has been arrested on suspicion of drink driving after a crash left a Mercedes in a ditch. The crash happened at about 8:50 a.m. on Wednesday in Reps Road, Martham, near the Co-op, when the car left the road before crashing into a ditch. Police remained at the scene for several hours, but the vehicle has since been recovered and the road has reopened. A man in his 50s was arrested at the scene on suspicion of drink driving. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. The driver was assessed at the scene, but no hospital transportation was required.
Mental health patients suffering from crises are being held in police cells longer than suspected criminals due to bed shortages, shocking new figures have shown. In the past year, 93 people detained by police under the Mental Health Act in Norfolk spent longer than 24 hours in police cells waiting for a bed to become available. It means these vulnerable people were held longer than suspected criminals. Constabularies are only lawfully allowed to hold suspects for 24 hours unless they are charged and remanded or given permission by a magistrate to keep them longer. The figure fell for the first time in 2024-25, but had been steadily increasing every year since 2019. A Freedom of Information request to Norfolk Constabulary has shown a record year for detentions under the Mental Health Act. Between April 2023 and March 2024, 139 in total. Of these, 112 were detained for longer than 24 hours. In 2019-20, this happened just 15 times. The situation has been described as Groundhog Day by campaigners who have long lobbied for more mental health beds to be funded. Mark Harrison, chairman of the Campaign to Save Mental Health Services in Norfolk and Suffolk, said, "This confirms what everybody knows, that NSFT does not have enough beds. The problem we face is that every part of the mental health and political establishment is covering up the reality. The fact that police are acting unlawfully by detaining people beyond the allowed time limit shows the depth of the problem. People in mental distress are dying unnecessarily because the government is refusing to invest the money required to save lives." Stuart G, Chief Transformal Officer of the Norfolk and Suffolk Foundation, said, "The safety, dignity and well-being of individuals in crisis is a priority for the Trust, and we are committed to reducing the use of mental health police detentions. We recognise this is not an appropriate environment for individuals in crisis and can have a significant impact on a person's recovery. The Trust is actively addressing this issue through several measures, including working to increase mental health bed capacity and collaborating with partners to help reduce the length of stay. The Trust is actively addressing this issue through collaboration with partners to help reduce the length of stay for mental health admissions.
And a story on a similar topic yet again. Over the past year, the number of detentions longer than 24 hours has fallen by 17%, the first time it has fallen in the past 5 years. But during the same time, the police has also introduced the controversial right person, right care policy, whereby certain types of mental health related calls are no longer attended by the force. The same period has also seen the temporary closure of a crisis suite at Helsden Hospital, although the Trust insists it has been able to provide the same level of availability through an alternative provision. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "The force is committed to protecting the most vulnerable in the community, and this can include being detained in custody to prevent risk to life of serious harm, until they can receive care from the most appropriate agency." There has been a decline in those recommended for detention under the Mental Health Act, with numbers falling from 139 in 2023-24 to 113 in 2024-25. We welcome this reduction and will continue to work alongside our partners to ensure that those in crisis are receiving the best care possible. For a 31-year-old Suffolk woman who asked not to be named, her most vulnerable moment was made all the worse when she found herself in a cell waiting for a bed. She said, "It was a horrifying experience. Being told I could not be released until there was a bed available was awful. I was able to speak to my mother through an intercom, but I had no access to a phone. I spent around 40 hours there in total, which was very distressing and had a long-lasting impact on my recovery. All it really achieved was delaying my access to the mental health professionals for 2 days and gave me a traumatic experience that I've taken years to recover from. Police staff did try their best, but they're not medically trained professionals."
Well, much more news shortly, but first, details on a packed month of events from Vision Norfolk. First, two standalone events. There's a summer quiz being held at the Bradbury Activity Centre on Tuesday the 8th of July between 5:30pm and 8pm. It's teams of four, which can be assembled on the night, and great fun is guaranteed. Contact Richard Polly or Mark Smith on 01603 573000 to book your place. On to Monday the 21st of July from 10am until 12pm, in conjunction with England and Wales Blind Golf Club, there's an adaptive golf clinic for individuals with sight loss. Trained instructors and volunteers will guide you through adapted techniques and specialised equipment to help you enjoy a game of golf in a safe, welcoming environment. Contact Richard Polly or Mark Smith on 01603 573000 to book your place and to find a venue. OK, moving on to the activity dates for July, we have the following. Tuesday the 1st of July is Case to Coffee Morning from 10 until 12, which is also happening on Tuesday the 15th. Martham's is on Thursday the 3rd at the same times, and the Great Yarmouth Caffeine Calls are on the following Wednesdays, namely the 2nd, the 9th, the 15th, the 23rd and the 30th, again 10 until 12 noon. Well, Wednesday the 2nd of July, it's yoga from 12:30 until 1:30 which is also happening on Wednesdays the 16th and 23rd. Thursdays are games mornings from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, with July's dates being the 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, and the 24th and the 31st. And there's basket weaving on Friday the 4th from 10 until 12, and again on Fridays the 11th and 18th. Fishy Friday for July is on Friday the 4th from 1 until 2 p.m. Bowling is on Tuesday the 8th from 12 noon until 3 p.m. and Wednesday the 9th it's Cobalt Systems drop-in from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. You can knit, stitch and natter on Thursday the 10th from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. or try some creative writing on Friday the 11th during the same times. Monday the 14th features a trip to Cromer, and any of the Hub staff will give you details on that one. And the morning of Friday the 25th of July is the rug workshop from 10 until 12, followed in the afternoon from 1:30 until 3 p.m. by the Audio Book Club with Mark or Helen on 01603 573000, having more details on that one. And the month sees an energetic end with tennis on Tuesday the 29th from 10 until 12 at a seafront walk on Thursday the 31st from 1 until 3 p.m. Any queries on any of these events, email catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk. That's catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk, or call Edward or Catherine on 01493 745 973. That's 01493 745 973. Well, it's certainly a fun-packed month. OK, it's time to go back to Desney and Margaret for some more news, followed closely by Desney's look at the week's TV.
Great Yarmouth MP has stirred controversy after it emerged he instructed a staff member to shoot his poorly dog. Former Reform member Rupert Lowe got his gamekeeper to put down his Labrador, Cromwell, with a rifle to end his suffering, and to avoid his pet having to go and see a vet to end his life. The 17-year-old dog was reportedly shot in the back of the head by the employee at his Gloucestershire estate after becoming ill and losing the use of his back legs. The incident has reportedly shocked fellow MPs, with one anonymous colleague calling it an old money thing to do. It would have been acceptable 100 years ago, but it's not now, in comments in the Daily Mail. However, Lowe, who now sits as an independent MP for Great Yarmouth, has defended his action, saying, "This is what happens on farms. Cromwell was in agony, back legs gone and in immense pain. His life was over. I asked a professional to do the humane act. Rather than waiting for a vet, which Cromwell hated, we chose to instantly end his suffering on my farm, where the dog felt at home. No apologies from me. I'd do the exact same tomorrow if required. I wouldn't expect Londoners to understand. They know nothing about life outside the M25 and what actually happens on a working farm. Using his memory to attack me is contemptible." Trevor Wainwright, leader of the Labour group, said he thought it was appalling to have killed his dog in this manner. "For a nation of animal lovers, I'd think most people would find this abhorrent. He is a multi-millionaire. Surely he could have afforded to pay a vet to come to his home and end his dog's life through an injection. It would have been more humane. Obviously there is a cost, but just to shoot your dog?" Cromwell was subsequently buried at the farm, and Lowe says he raised a glass to a life well lived. "He was a good dog and I miss him dearly," he added. "I loved Cromwell. I wanted his end to be as swift, painless and comfortable as possible." The incident has stirred debate about whether or not it is acceptable to kill your own pet in such a manner as Mr. Lowe chose to do. Euthanizing pets at home is not illegal in most circumstances. It may be carried out by anyone, provided that it is carried out humanely, according to the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons. It is deemed acceptable if the animal is medically so sick or injured that it is near death. Killing a healthy animal could lead to accusations of animal cruelty. Vets charge between £80 and £200 to euthanise a dog. Elizabeth Davenport, campaign manager at Animal Aid, believes the lack of laws surrounding at-home euthanasia highlights a serious failing of animal protection in the UK. Lowe previously had his arsenal of guns seized by police following an investigation into claims he made verbal threats of violence towards former Reform chairman Zia Youssef. The charges were later dropped. Last week, Mr. Lowe was forced to miss being in Parliament for the launch of a national inquiry into grooming gangs, an issue he has campaigned for due to police conducting checks in order for his guns to be returned.
A man has been left with a head injury following a fight in Great Yarmouth. The brawl between two men broke out in Northcote Street at about 3:50 p.m. on Monday. During the commotion, a man in his 40s suffered a head injury. He was then arrested on suspicion of a fray at the scene. One ambulance attended the scene following reports of a violent incident. The man was assessed at the James Paget University Hospital before being taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning, where he remains. A teenager was arrested on suspicion of GBH and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre. He has been released on bail while investigations continue.
A small shark has been found dead on a beach in Norfolk. Simon Franklin and his daughter Bella were visiting Winston-on-Sea near Great Yarmouth from Norwich. The pair came across a dead smooth hound shark during the visit over the weekend. "We were paddling around and happened to see it floating," Mr. Franklin said. "Sadly, it was dead, although it had not been dead very long, as it was still very fresh. Surprisingly, no seals had gotten to it yet, as there were plenty around." A spokeswoman for the Eastern Branch of the Environment Agency stated that the deaths of small sharks are most likely connected to fishing-related mortalities. This is due to the species moving inshore to feed, which makes them susceptible to being caught. The sharks are primarily bottom dwellers, inhabiting sand or muddy seabeds.
A teenager is in hospital after being assaulted in the early hours of Thursday morning. Police and ambulance were called to North Deans Road in Great Yarmouth at 1:30 a.m. A male aged in his teens had sustained a cut to his face which required surgery, so he was taken to the James Paget Hospital. He has since been transferred to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital. Four teenage males were arrested on suspicion of grievous bodily harm. One of the males was also arrested on suspicion of drug driving, and another was also arrested on suspicion of being in possession of a bladed article. Two have been taken to Aylsham Police Investigation Centre for questioning, and two remain in custody at Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre. Police have confirmed they're not looking for anybody else in relation to the incident, and all the people involved are believed to be known to each other. A police cordon and tent will remain in place while officers carry out a specialist examination. Officers now appealing for anyone who witnessed the incident or captured any doorbell or dash cam footage that could help the ongoing investigation to come forward.
A group of Galston school staff has completed a 26-mile fundraising hike. The team from Stradbrook Primary Academy participated in the Norfolk Coast Mighty Hike and raised £2,310 for Macmillan Cancer Support. The seven staff members, known as the Stradbrook Strollers, tackled the route from Cromer to Hocombe on Saturday, May the 10th, enduring a challenging section along a 3.5-mile shingle-covered beach. With more than 7 miles already covered before this stretch, the team appreciated the support received along the way from water and fuel stations, as well as cheers from the public. Despite sore muscles, blisters and aching feet, the team remained determined to complete the hike. The team expressed gratitude for the support and the donations they received. In a statement, they said, "Emotions were running high at the finishing line as the extent of the challenge was realised and the fact it was for such a worthy charity." The Norfolk Coast Mighty Hike is an annual event raising funds for Macmillan Cancer Support, with more details available on Macmillan's website.
They're used to responding to emergencies, but the crew of Hemsby Lifeboat have had to issue their own Mayday call to deal with an anonymous Facebook page making scurrilous allegations about them. The group instructed a lawyer to force the Hemsby Eyes account to remove a string of posts making unsubstantiated claims about its members. The Facebook page has been at the centre of gossip in the village for several weeks, publishing a string of outrageous allegations about a number of local institutions, including the lifeboat. It claimed the charity had been selling stolen goods and accused members of various crimes and sexual misbehaviour, all without evidence and strongly denied by the organisation. The lifeboat group says members who have been abused in the street as a result of the false claims, which they suspect are part of a smear campaign by people who wrongly blame the lifeboat for worsening coastal erosion in the village. Speculation about who might be behind the page has been rife. The lifeboat's lawyer sent a letter to four villagers they thought were behind the account, demanding they remove the posts and publish an apology. The EDP has spoken to one of the accused, who has denied any involvement at all. The site has since been removed from Facebook. No apologies was posted, and it is believed Meta, who owns Facebook, removed the posts following complaints. Chris Batten, helmsman and a trustee of Hemsby Lifeboat, said the page had been damaging us for the sake of damaging us. The organisation instructed Norwich-based solicitors Rogers and Norton, which sent out four letters on its behalf, to villagers suspected of being behind the account. The letter said the administrators of the Facebook page were responsible for sharing libels, malicious falsehoods and breaches of GDPR and data rules. It accused the people behind the site of having a vendetta and conducting a smear campaign against the lifeboat. It suggested that this might be because they wrongly believe the organisation is responsible for worsening coastal erosion in the village, where the beach and the dunes are gradually being lost to the sea. The letter states the posts on the page have had a direct impact on the lifeboat's fundraising. Mr. Batten said he would be happy to meet with any of the recipients of the letter who were not connected to the page and felt they had been falsely accused. If they feel they've been wrongly identified, there is a very simple resolution to that, he said. Have a chat with us directly, and we will be the first to apologise if we got it wrong. We would also ask them to consider why we think it was them. All they have to do is stop doing what they're doing. We were set up in Hemsby to help locals and people visiting our coastline and the Norfolk Broads, and to help people in distress on our waterways and sea. That's all we do and all we're there for. Damaging us for the sake of damaging us is quite risky, because if we close the doors and go away, then you've left a whole length of the Broads and the sea undefended. Volunteers at Hemsby Lifeboat have even been abused in the street because of the various allegations published by Hemsby Eyes, according to Mr. Batten. Last month, police were notified about the posts, although officers ruled it did not meet the threshold to trigger an investigation. We've had a volunteer who is going about their daily business, who was simply a fundraising volunteer, abused in the street because of the posts that are being put about, he added. Every single trustee and every volunteer at the lifeboat is feeling put on and feeling bullied. But an anonymous administrator of the Hemsby Eyes page has remained defiant. He told the EDP, "Our page was started so people can reach out in an honest way. The community itself and its intel actually run the page. We just put it out there. As for a public apology and removal of the information, we will not do this."
A photographer has captured images of the first osprey chicks to be born in Norfolk in 250 years. Lynn Warner is a volunteer photographer for the Broads Authority and snapped the new hatchlings on Tuesday afternoon. After her third broat trip around Ranworth Broad and marshes, she finally managed to get a shot. The reserve is the first known site in East Anglia to make a home for breeding osprey in more than 250 years. The birds first arrived this April, and instantly the male was seen carrying sticks to build a nest. Unlike the previous 2 years, the female arrived days later, and soon sightings of feeding and mating behaviour began to get reported. After spotting that the female is ringed on her right leg, Lynn is trying to help the osprey community figure out where she is from. It is possible to see the tree where the ospreys created their nest for at least two chicks via a telescope on site.
Norfolk drivers could be spared fines. Recruitment struggles and long-term staff sickness mean drivers who flout parking restrictions in Norfolk are less likely to be fined. Council officials said the parking enforcement officers which issue fines were being stretched thinly because of staff shortages. While new figures revealed 36,000 penalty charge notices were issued across the county over a 12-month period, officers said there were difficulties in covering the whole county. Members of the Norfolk Parking Partnership Joint Committee, made up of councillors from the county's various councils, heard about the struggles at a meeting on Tuesday. Officials told councillors there were three vacancies in Great Yarmouth which had yet to be filled, despite recruitment attempts. Miranda Lee, head of customer services at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "Attracting staff for vacant posts has been a bit of an issue, and that will have an adverse impact on the PCN income." Martin Chisholm, business manager at West Norfolk Council, said, "We are experiencing exactly the same issues. In areas such as North Norfolk, Breckland and Broadland, where we have two full-time equivalents covering the whole of North Norfolk, one in Broadland and two in Breckland, you don't need a lot of sickness or a lot of churn to create quite an impact on the results these areas have. I'm aware that Norwich City Council has embarked on a recruitment campaign to fill some of their longer-term vacancies, which is helping." But Mr. Chisholm said, "With shorter distances to travel around the city, it was simpler for Norwich to be covered than some rural areas. We are monitoring it carefully. Long-term sickness is probably our biggest issue, because it's totally unpredictable in most cases." He said the available enforcement officers were working really hard to focus on areas of most significant contravention. The fines are either £50 or £70, depending on seriousness, and are halved if paid quickly.
The ultimate party for 11 to 16-year-olds is coming to Great Yarmouth. On July the 18th, St George's Theatre will host Pop Party, Freshly Grated, a live music event featuring some of Great Yarmouth's best young artists. The event promises to play favourite hits, making it a perfect outing for youngsters looking for something fun to do in Yarmouth. Tickets are priced at just £3, making it an affordable night out for teenagers. In the lead-up to the Pop Party, a series of music workshops will be held to help budding musicians develop their skills and performance. These workshops will take place at St George's Theatre Cafe and are open to anyone aged 14 to 25. The organisers encourage young musicians to get involved and find out more about the dates and participation details on the Play Produce Promote Instagram page or by emailing play, produce, promote at freshlygrated.org.uk. That's grated is great as G-R-E-A-T-E-D. So it's a like a play on words. Doors for the pop party will open at 6:45 with the event set to kick off at 7 p.m. Tickets are available for purchase now on the theatre website.
A bid to convert a former telephone exchange in Marth into housing has been refused. The plans were seeking permission from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to extend and convert Martham Telephone Exchange on Reps Road into a one-bedroom house. Planners said the proposal would not be a conversion as the extensions should subsume the existing building, a small, narrow, detached, single-storey brick property. They said the planned house would be much larger than the existing building and with a totally different character and appearance. Other reasons for rejecting the Martham plans were overdevelopment of the plot, the cramped form of the house, and insufficient outdoor space. The site was also located on an unsustainable location in the countryside, planning officials added. The application was proposing side and rear extensions, as well as a new roof. There was one objection to the plans, raising concerns about overdevelopment of the site. In 2017, a previous application to change the use to residential was refused and later dismissed at appeal.
And more from St George's Theatre, where a new play is to be performed. A new play is set to be performed at St George's Theatre. Play Nicely Theatre's production of There Is a Light and a Whistle for Attracting Attention will be performed at the venue on July the 5th. The play tells the story of a girl who meets a boy and knows the script of their love story. However, things start to go wrong, and she realises that the stories she's been told don't serve her anymore. She doesn't fit the role and needs to rewrite her part in order to be seen. Play Nicely Theatre was founded to tell stories old and new. Their hit 2023 tour of Bruntwood Judges prize winner Martha Loder's play Splinter was a finalist in the Pub Theatre Standing Ovation Awards and awarded an Ofcom. Tickets for the show are on sale now. They are priced at £10 for students and £12 for standard tickets. The show will start at 7:30 p.m. with doors opening at 7 p.m.
And some good news at long last. A pub in the south of Great Yarmouth has been named among the best in the region for the second year running. Blackfriars Tavern has been crowned East Anglia Camera Cider Pub of the Year 2025, a prestigious accolade recognising excellence in the promotion and service of real cider and perry. This was awarded by the Campaign for Real Ale, as Camera, whose regional cider coordinator praised Blackfriars Tavern for its exceptional selection, knowledgeable staff and unwavering commitment to quality. The award comes after Blackfriars Tavern was named East Anglia Camera Pub of the Year in 2024. Landlord Farez Smith said, "We're incredibly proud to receive this award. It means a lot to be recognised for championing real cider and perry. Our aim has always been to celebrate quality, and this award shows we're doing just that." The Blackfriars Tavern continues to offer a rotating selection of 40 real ciders and perries from small producers across East Anglia and beyond, alongside a range of real ales.
A stunning photo taken by a photographer on the Norfolk Broads has captured a rare sight that can only be seen for 2 months of the year. Adrian Barnard was taking pictures at Strumpshaw Fen last weekend when he spotted a Norfolk Hawker dragonfly. "It's probably one of the hardest things to capture," Mr. Barnard said. "The rare Norfolk Hawker is a pale brown dragonfly with a distinctive yellow triangle on its body, which can only be seen in June or July. Until recently, it was only found in unpolluted fens, marshes and ditches of the Broads National Park in Norfolk and Suffolk, although its range has started to expand. Capturing an image of the dragonfly is difficult, as they can fly at speeds of up to 22 miles per hour, move their wings approximately 30 times a second, and fly forwards, sideways, and backwards. Well, let's face it, if you want to watch television next week, it'll mostly be Wimbledon, and it could also be the women's Euro football. Wimbledon starts on Monday for 2 weeks, up until Saturday and Sunday, the 12th and 13th of July. And women's Euro football starts on Wednesday, the 2nd of July, until the final on Sunday, the 27th of July. And on top of that, the Formula One GP races move back from Canada to Europe, with the Austrian Grand Prix this weekend, with qualifying highlights on Channel 4 on Saturday and Sunday, and race highlights on Sunday at 5:30 p.m. If you want to see the whole race, you'll have to watch on Sky. But Wimbledon actually dominates from about 10:30 in the morning until 10 at night on BBC. If it's not on one, it's on two. But the second week won't take up quite so much time, because by that time they'll have got rid of most of their contestants. They start off with 128, so how many rounds is that to get back down to one? I'm quite sure. The women's Euro football, there's no British interest in the football matches that are on this week, and there are two a day from Wednesday the 2nd of July, when it starts in Switzerland, until the weekend, which is next weekend, the 5th of July, when England and Wales are both playing their first matches of the tournament. On Saturday at 9 p.m, there is the Secrets of Diana's Wedding Dress, and her dress with its 25-foot train was certainly the stuff of fairy tales, even though eventually the wedding was not. And this one, this programme, is a one-off which looks at how this elaborate dress was created, with contributions from Elizabeth Emanuel, who was one of the designers. And there are rare archive drawings and footage, as well as behind-the-scenes stories of the 1981 royal wedding gown that captivated the world. And another thing that's on this weekend that will take up quite a lot of time is Glastonbury. So if you're into your music, you might be pleased to know that there's not much else on the BBC on Saturday night. If it's not on one, it's on two, as I've said before, I think. And we'll now have a look and see if we can find anything that's not sport or music. If you've been watching the Tudor mystery Shard Lake, that comes to an end this Monday. The last episode you won't want to miss. It's on ITV on Monday at 9 p.m. So I hope you don't want to watch the tennis at the same time. On Wednesday, ITV at 9 p.m, Davina McCall and Nikki Campbell bring us the third and final episode in their current series of Long Lost Family, Born Without Trace, where another two people, in this case Sarah and Chris, who were abandoned as babies. Sarah was abandoned in 2001 at birth, and the other, Chris, was dropped off at the age of 3 months with a childminder, and that was 62 years ago. He was not picked up. Anyway, they'll see if they can trace something about their original families. That's ITV1, 9 p.m. on Wednesday. And new on Channel 4 on Thursday, a new programme, can you believe it, amongst all that sport, is the start of a series called Super Cruising Life at Sea, following the life on two luxury cruise ships off to sunning spots across the world. Passengers are heading to North Africa and Europe, face stringent security checks, while those cruising the Americas have a private beach barbecue in the Bahamas. Sounds good to me. Well, whether you're a sport addict or just a television addict, There's a bit for you to look at.
Thanks, Desney. OK, it's time for the last part of this week's local news. So it's back with Desney and Margaret.
2025 Royal Norfolk Show. An excited sea of activity has put the final finishing touches to marquees, arenas and animals as anticipation grows for the Royal Norfolk Show. The two-day summer spectacular expects to bring 80,000 visitors to the Norfolk Showground on Wednesday and Thursday for the annual showcase of food and drink, rural life and family entertainment. Mark Nicholas, Managing Director of Show Organisers, the Royal Norfolk Agricultural Association, RNAA, welcomed a forecast of mainly fine and warm weather. Well, they certainly got that today, while overseeing final preparations at the venue. It looks like perfect show weather, and we're thrilled now to be ready for the show, he said. We relish welcoming thousands of visitors turning up over the next 2 days. Looking out across the showground, I see a sea of activity. There are groups of people everywhere. I've just seen a group of Wyndham College students making preparations for show jumping in the Grand Ring, and a lot of agricultural machinery is being unloaded onto the site. People are very cheery and confident, and really pleased to be back here with old friends and new for another Royal Norfolk show. It's a reliable rock in a fast-changing and unpredictable world. Mr. Nicholas was particularly excited by the prospect of seeing 5,000 young musicians performing across the showground as part of the Norfolk Music Hub's programme of live music. That's quite extraordinary, an incredible achievement by the Norfolk Music Hub, and I'm sure everyone will enjoy the festival atmosphere of having so much live music on site, he said. The event promises to serve up a mouth-watering celebration of food and drink, with showgoers able to visit the new £3 million Norfolk Food Hall, sample produce from more than 120 local firms at the popular Adams Food and Drink Experience, or pair local specialities at the new Norfolk Wine and Cheese Experience. The traditional rural centrepiece will feature more than 3,000 animals in top-level livestock and equestrian competitions. Meanwhile, jaw-dropping displays in the Grand Ring include the Pony Club Mounted Games, the Shetland Pony Derby, Bulldog Ling's Motorcycle Display Team, the Duke of York's Royal Military School Marching Band, and the RAF Falcons Parachute Display Team. Celebrities at the show include Girls Aloud star Nicola Roberts, who will be judging the Battle of the Bands contest, and social media sensation and jacket potato entrepreneur Spudman, whose TikTok channel has 4.2 million followers. Goodie bags including an EDP, Norwich Evening News, crisps, popcorn, water, apple and a show guide will be on sale at £2 at all 5 showground entrances. For more details and tickets, see royalnorfolkshow.co.uk. But by the time you get this recording, it will have all shut down. Sorry about that.
Something else to shut down plans to shut school here. Cantley Primary School unveiled controversial plans to merge with the neighbouring school in Freethorpe last month against a backdrop of dwindling numbers. The school has seen a steady decline in pupil in recent years and did not receive a single application for September 2025. The situation sparked the merger plan with a consultation into the proposals closing last week. The move was set with protests from parents in the village, with a petition against it signed 466 times. However, school leaders have confirmed the plan is now moving on to the next phase, a formal public notice period running until July the 16th. This period will serve as a final chance for any objectors to raise their concerns. Once this lapses, a final decision will be made by the region's Director of Education. In a letter to parents, Executive Head Teacher David Hopkins wrote, "If the amalgamation is approved, all teaching and learning will move to the Freethorpe Primary School site from the start of the new academic year in September. If the proposal is declined, Cantley Primary will remain open and teaching will continue on site with a single mixed age class comprising of children from reception through to year six. Meanwhile, the school has confirmed its preschool will close in September, regardless of whether the merger goes ahead. Following the original proposals, a group of parents at the school vowed to fight against the closure. Among them was Matthew Lawson, whose six-year-old daughter Fern attends the school. Speaking in May, he said, "As parents, we can't not fight this. We've got to show our children that you can stand up to these kind of things. It will be an important lesson for them to learn." But Penny Carpenter, Cabinet Member for Children's Services at County Hall, said, "With no children expected in reception next year and just 17 on roll, it would be near impossible to provide a broad curriculum that could meet the needs of all children. The school will also no longer be financially viable. Freethorpe is a really good school, and we believe it is the right decision to move forward with the public notice to amalgamate." She added, "We appreciate the effort people have taken in responding to the consultation and have thoroughly considered the comments received. It is clear the school has been a valued part of the community for many years, and many children have enjoyed a good education there. Sadly, the school just isn't sustainable in its current form."
The Neo Santa Maria is docking at Town Quay from July the 9th to July the 20th and will be allowing visitors to board the boat. Great Yarmouth will become one of the first UK ports to welcome the ship after its tour around the world. The boat is a replica of the flagship boat that Christopher Columbus used to sail around the world on his expeditions. It was the largest of the three ships that the explorer used to sail across the Atlantic Ocean when he discovered America.
A runner from Galston has made a name for himself, winning a 50k race. Marcus Jolly, who is an ultra-marathon runner, has won the Anglesway race. This was his sixth ultra-marathon this year. His previous race was a 56-mile run in Scotland, where he came 14th. Next year, Mr. Jolly is set to run 80 miles around the Isle of Skye. He is currently ranked 13th nationally and 3rd in his age category.
A sinkhole has opened near the Sainsbury supermarket in Great Yarmouth. The hole was reported in St Nicholas Road near the store on Friday, with the County Council made aware. An eyewitness claimed that the hole looked to be caving in when they discovered it. A County Council spokesman said, "Our Out of Ours team barriered off the area on St Nicholas Road on Thursday evening in response to a report from local residents. Our technician visited the site on Friday and raised a works order for repair. At this time, the area is safe. It is hoped that the repairs will be carried out soon."
Plans for dog walking site refused. Plans to build a dog's exercise facility in Martham have been thrown out after a backlash from locals. Mr and Mrs Self had applied to change the use of an agricultural field on land near Hall Road in Martham. Their bid proposed that the site would be used for dog owners to walk their dogs because some dogs are unsuitable for open dog walking due to their breed or non-compliance with the Dangerous Dogs Act. Plans showed that the field's perimeter would be fully fenced with a 1.8 metre security fence and would open at 7 a.m. and close at 5 p.m. They also outlined that only two people and a maximum of four dogs would be allowed on the site at any time. But the bid was refused by Great Yarmouth Borough Council, which said the proposal would have a significant detrimental impact upon the amenities of nearby residential properties by virtue of noise resulting from dogs in such close proximity to nearby dwellings. This is in contrast to what the planning application claimed about the proposal, which said the change of use of the site would not have an adverse impact on neighbouring properties as a result of the proposal. The council added in its refusal that some of the best and most versatile agricultural land would be lost, and that the applicant didn't show that a clearly defined need for the dog exercise facility exists, or that the proposed development is necessary. One neighbour lodged an objection, stating that they feared the development would impact the peace and beauty of our situation. Another neighbour raised multiple fears that it would greatly increase traffic and noise pollution with dogs barking, which would ruin the peaceful environment currently enjoyed by residents. Other neighbours raised concerns about the environmental impact that losing the land would have on wildlife. One said, "Hall Road holds an abundance of common farmland birds, including linnets, goldfinches, yellowhammers, green woodpecker and partridges. The increase in noise and disturbance from both traffic and excited dogs exercising will surely have an adverse impact on these species."
Woman stole two parcels from neighbour. A woman stole two parcels belonging to her disabled neighbour that she claimed were left on her doorstep. Julie Gamgee, 59, took the packages, which contained £53.46 worth of deodorants and wool that had been left for her Galston neighbour. Prosecutor Gaff Khan told Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court that the victim, a disabled woman, had asked her carer to collect the parcels that she knew were delivered to her neighbour's address, as she was unable to get there. When it was realised that the parcels had been opened and stolen, the police were called. Lisa Day, mitigating, said it was a momentary lapse of judgment after the parcels were left on her doorstep and her client is deeply ashamed. Magistrates ordered Gamgee of Beccles Road in Galston to repay the victim in full, £53.46, which will be collected from her benefits. Due to the defendant's financial situation, she was not required to pay any court fees.
Stroke survivor set to travel to Mexico. A much-loved local entertainer is hoping to travel to Mexico for pioneering neurological treatment after suffering a life-changing stroke. Busby Allen, a fixture at Potter's Resorts in Hopton for more than 40 years, was left with severe speech and mobility challenges following a catastrophic basal ganglia stroke in May 2023. The prognosis was bleak, and survival alone felt like a miracle. But Busby, known for his boundless energy, humour and warmth, has never been one to give up without a fight. With the support of the NHS, his devoted wife Lizzie and a close network of friends, he has made remarkable progress. More than a year on, however, his recovery has stalled. His speech remains heavily affected and daily tasks are a constant struggle. There is now a fresh glimmer of hope in the form of a groundbreaking treatment available at Neurocytonics, a private neurological clinic in Monterrey in Mexico. The clinic offers a 28-day treatment called Functional Neurogenesis Stimulation, FNS, which stimulates the brain and promotes new neural connections. The treatment, though not yet available on NHS, has already shown promising results. Among its most high-profile success stories is the Sky Sports presenter and former footballer Chris Kamara, who credits the programme with helping restore his speech and balance after being diagnosed with apraxia of speech. His wife said, "This is about helping Busby reclaim some of what the stroke took from him. Even 10% more movement, 10% more speech, anything that brings him closer to who he was would be life-changing. The full cost of treatment, travel and accommodation is estimated at just over £30,000. The campaign is being led by friend and former colleague Mike Scott. He said, "Busby spent decades giving his all to guests and staff alike. He was the heart and soul of Potter's. Now it's our turn to give something back." Donations can be made at www.buzzneedsyou.com. For those who'd like to support by getting a badge, Busby's fundraiser badge is available for a £5 donation at www.buzzbadge.com. And Buzz Badge is all one word, but there is a capital B at the beginning of Buzz and at the beginning of Badge.
And another item on health. A peer support group is offering a lifeline for people living with migraines. The group meets monthly at the Louise Hamilton Centre at the James Paget Hospital in Galston. It provides a safe space for individuals to connect, share experiences and learn about treatment options and self-management strategies. A spokesman for James Paget University Hospital said, "The group aims to provide the opportunity to talk to others with the condition, as well as giving you a chance to find out more about the treatments available and other things that may help you. The group is open to anyone who suffers from migraines. It meets on the third Thursday of each month between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Attendees can drop in without booking." The Trust said migraine is a serious neurological condition that can affect anyone, regardless of age or gender. For more information about the group, email neurology@jpaget.nhs.uk or you can call 01493 453 937. Additional resources and support are available through the Migraine Trust at migrainetrust, it's all one word, migrainetrust.org.
Businesses in Great Yarmouth have been asked to speak out about the impact of rises in national insurance contributions as part of a new employer survey. The rate of employers' national insurance contributions went up in April, with the threshold for contributions also being lowered. Businesses employing staff on average or lower wages, which is common in Great Yarmouth's tourism, retail, care and maritime industries, are facing 25% increases in national insurance bills. Now, a new online survey launched by Councillor Daniel Candon is asking businesses' owners to quantify the impact of the rise, from delayed recruitment to reduced investment. "This is a tax on jobs, plain and simple," Mr. Candon, Cabinet Member for Economic Development and Growth on Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said. "The government's national insurance contributions hike punishes businesses for employing people, especially in lower paid sectors like hospitality, care and construction, right at a time when we should be backing local growth. I'm hearing from business owners who are cutting hours, holding back pay rises, and thinking twice about taking on new staff. We need real evidence to challenge this short-sighted Labour policy, and that's why I'm asking businesses across Great Yarmouth to take 3 minutes to fill in this survey and share it with others. Their voices deserve to be heard." Early responses highlight a pattern of concern from small employers. Richard Farnese, who runs a family restaurant on Regent Road, said, "Our wage bill has gone up significantly just from the national insurance rise. That's money we would have used for equipment, training, or even taking on a young apprentice. It's quite clear that the Labour Chancellor is blind to how close to the margins small businesses really are."
A proposed 20-metre telecoms mast is facing opposition amid concerns over road safety and visual impact on Hopton Village. Mobile network operator EE is seeking permission to install a new telecommunications base station at the junction of Station Road and Lowestoft Road in Hopton. The scheme includes a 20-metre high pole supporting 9 antennas to be located on a grass verge beside the busy A47 roundabout. The new mast would replace an existing radio base station located approximately 290 metres to the south between the A47 and Lowestoft Road. EE says the current site is being decommissioned after the landowner issued a notice to quit. According to the application, the proposed installation is needed not only to maintain existing 4G network coverage and capacity, but also to prepare for future upgrades to 5G technology. However, the plans have prompted objections from Hopton Parish Council, which described the mast as exceptionally tall and raised concerns about its potential to obstruct visibility at the junction. In a formal response, the parish council said, "There is a concern that the antenna tower is exceptionally tall and that it will block the vision at the junction of the Lowestoft Road and Station Road." Norfolk County Council's Highways Department has also expressed reservations. While it has not objected outright, it warned that following maintenance vehicles to stop on the carriageway would be unacceptable and could cause hazardous conditions for road users. To address the issue, highways officials have recommended that the developer provide a dedicated maintenance bay within the verge, allowing service vehicles to safely access the site without impeding traffic. A decision on the bid, currently in the hands of planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, is expected by June the 27th.
Sunshine and warm weather brought record crowds to the coast for a festival celebrating cars and motorcycles. The Wheels Festival took place along the Yarmouth seafront over the weekend, and it was the busiest on record, with 68,500 visitors. The event, now in its ninth year, featured a wide variety of vehicles, including classic and contemporary cars, bikes, superbikes, and even stunt performances. Festival goers enjoyed everything from classic and sports cars to quirky creations lining up along the seafront. This year's event was headlined by the motorcycle display team Bold Dog, who brought daring and extreme skills, including a 75-foot jump to St Nicholas Car Park. Other highlights included the Monster Ride truck Red Dragon and the BM Extras. Asa Morrison, CEO of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "We were gifted with true summer weather all weekend, which drew people to the seafront to enjoy all Great Yarmouth has to offer and made it the busiest Wheels Festival yet. We know from talking to our members with accommodation that visitors had come to stay for the whole weekend. Dates are set for next year and the planning will start. We refresh entertainment for every event and we will be reviewing in the early autumn and will make announcements in the new year. The dates for next year's festival have been announced as June the 20th and 21st, 2026. The winner of Best in Show on Saturday was a Venetian Red 1974 Ford Escort restored by Ken Lane of Braintree in Essex. Sunday's winner was a 41-year-old white VW Golf GTI restored by Ivan Folks of Bradwell. The festival is free, while donations are given to East Anglian Air Ambulance.
The Rotary Wishing Well in Galston has celebrated its 45th year of collecting coins for charity. Based on Lower Marine Parade, the well is emptied annually by the Galston Rotary Club, and the total amount this year was £172.69. This sum will aid the club's ongoing support for charitable organisations, both within the local community and further afield. Occasionally, a few other items, such as car keys and mobile phones, have been found among the coins. A spokesperson said, "Many thanks for sparing a few coins when you pass by the wishing well next time. It all adds up. And don't forget, it's a wishing well, so do make a wish."
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury, However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Desney and Nevia. So, we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, we hope the summer weather comes back soon, but in any event, stay safe and well, and bye for now.